Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte's homicide count continues to climb. It hasn't reached its historical high, but the rise is very troubling and difficult to understand. It is the why behind the rising count that the Charlotte Observer wanted to understand and report on, and the result is a four-part series called Dismissed. The title stems from one of the newspaper's findings that all too often people facing weapons charges rarely face real punishment. And of those charged with murder in Mecklenburg County, nearly half had prior weapons charges. Even more troubling, a number of those suspects would have been in jail at the time of the murder had they been convicted for prior charges. So today we look into what the Observer found when they combed through the data. That task fell in large part to Ames Alexander and to Gavin Off. Alexander is an investigative reporter, and Off is a data reporter for the newspaper. Welcome back to both of you.
How you doing, Mike?
Good.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Also, to help us understand why and how this has been happening, we invited two of the county's key participants in our criminal justice system over the years. Spencer Merriweather is a career prosecutor with more than a decade of experience. He is now the county's district attorney. Welcome back to you.
Hello, Mike.
And we're joined by former prosecutor and former assistant DA Stephen Ward, who retired in 2011 after 25 years on the job. Prior to that, he was an assistant public defender, and he is currently a member of the faculty at Belmont Abbey College in their criminal justice department. Thank you for being here, too.
Glad to be here,
Good
Mike.
To see you. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. And you can watch us this morning on Facebook Live. So let me begin with Ames Alexander and Gavin Off from the Charlotte Observer. You begin your series with the story of one man, Mario McGill, who keeps committing crimes, weapons crimes, and keeps getting charges against him dismissed until he kills someone. And that, I think, if I read through the whole series, that's a running theme through this series. Did that surprise you, or was it the knowledge that this happens? Was the knowledge of that what gave you the impetus to do the series?
Yeah, what surprised us is just seeing how frequently this happened. We started this research, I guess, in early 2018, and we were coming off a pretty bloody year in Charlotte. There were 87 homicides that year, the highest number since the mid-90s. And so Gavin and I got talking, I think, January 2018 about why that was happening. So we decided to get data from the State Administrative Office of the courts. And one of the first things that jumped out at us is that weapons charges were getting dismissed again and again and again. And we found that 7 times out of 10, weapons charges get dismissed in Mecklenburg County. And so that really shocked me. And then when we started seeing the individual stories like Mario McGill, who got 13 consecutive weapons charges dismissed from 2007 to 2014, and then he was free on January 5th, 2015, and that was the day he shot and killed Robert Miller, who was a childhood friend.
As you went through the data, and you are the data guy, Gavin, aside from that alarming statistic, were there anything else that you didn't know that got your attention pretty quickly?
Yeah, like Ames said, Mecklenburg, for one reason or another, stood out. Our dismissal rate was around 68% for weapons crimes. I think Wake County, which has roughly the same population, same size population anyway, was around 45%. So that was the initial finding that stood out. The data covered from 2014 through 2018, give or take 195,000 weapons crimes. And what we found when you look at that period of time, that Mecklenburg had about 125 people who committed at least who were charged at least a dozen times with weapons crimes during that time. And that could be one single incident, 12 charges. You know, maybe he shot at someone, maybe he robbed someone, maybe he assaulted someone, or it could be spread out over 5, 6, 7, 8 times. And when you compare 125 compared to Wake, which I think had 23. So it seemed like time and again, Mecklenburg was the outlier.
So you started this series because of the alarming incidence of homicide last year, 2018. I think it's worse this year, if I'm not mistaken, or it's on track to be worse.
Yeah.
But this was not; these 2 years are not the high water mark for homicide in Charlotte. If I don't know whether you can answer this question, because I don't know if you went back this far, but if you went back to when we were called the Little Chicago, would the same factors be holding true, or would it be a completely different story in terms of criminal justice?
The same factors did hold true. In fact, we did a previous series, I believe it was around 2000. It was called Doing the Crime But Not the Time, and it found a very similar pattern statewide and in Mecklenburg County. So this is not a new problem by any means.
So Spencer Merriweather has been quietly sitting here taking notes. He's the district attorney. How long have you been district attorney? A couple of years now.
Just under a couple of years, actually. Okay. 22 months at this
so
point.
So in their first story, and I'm sure none of this surprises you, I'm sure you're well aware of all of what they are you? Were you well aware of all that they reported?
Certainly.
Okay. In the first story, as they mentioned, in this four-part series, they report that this fellow by the name of Mario McGill had 13 consecutive weapons charges against him dismissed in a, what, seven-year period from 2007 to 2014. That's about two per year. They report that from 2014 to 2018, Mecklenburg prosecutors dismissed 68% of weapons charges. It's a higher rate than any other urban county in the state. Why? How is that possible?
Well, probably appropriate for me to start with the Mario McGill case and to start by saying first, it makes all the sense in the world for a community to be frustrated by the fact that there are people who are having cases dismissed and going to commit other crimes. I do believe that the community has is right to ask the question of whether or not those decisions were sound and legally justified. And I don't think I saw anything in the series that was done by the Observer that suggested that it wasn't legally justified. For all of the decisions to dismiss, which is a hard decision to do in the face of violence, mm-hmm. in every single one of those decisions, it was sadly what had to have happened, what had to happen.
The dismissal
had to happen.
Because?
Exactly. In the Mario McGill case specifically, the one witness who would have been relied upon to push that case forward made differing statements. There were things that were actually not said at the scene that were said in later interviews with that particular witness that we found out were untrue. Mm-hmm. One of the things we talk about, the difference between arrest and conviction, and in an arrest, it is an officer who makes an arrest and establishes probable cause to proceed forward. Well, once you get to the point of trying to actually convict somebody, you then have the scrutiny of a defense that's applied. There's a whole other lawyer that comes into play who actually is trying to give a jury reasons not to say that what they say is correct, but merely to prove reasonable doubt. That's what people in my office are trying to combat every single day. And so it's one thing to say that you can look at these arrests and see how many of them do or do not turn into convictions, but it's crazy to actually try to make that comparison and not understand that you are operating within a judicial system.
But this happens all over the country, and as I just said, we dismiss 68% of weapons charges, a higher rate than any other urban county in the state. Why us?
Well,
Why aren't they doing this elsewhere?
Well, I think one of the things that we face in Mecklenburg County that maybe they don't face, and matter of fact, I know that they don't face necessarily in Wake and Guilford and other places, is that our population is so much more than theirs, that our population density is so much more than theirs, that our rate of poverty is so much more than theirs. And that this didn't get a lot of attention in the series of articles that was done by The Observer. But when you have an hourly laborer who has to actually come to court and testify and be a witness,
right.
It's a lot harder for that person to actually maintain and endure through a justice system where they know that for the next 2 years they've got to come and check into court and testify.
Stephen Ward is sitting to your right. He's a former a prosecutor, a former defense attorney, as a matter of fact, who now teaches criminal law, criminal justice at Belmont Abbey College. So you have some distance on this. You retired in 2011, but you were with the department for 25 years. Was it always this way, or have we just outgrown ourselves?
It's always been this way. But
So is the argument that we have a bigger population than Wake County, for instance, a valid argument?
We have similar populations in size, but we have different composition of our population. Wake County has got a very educated population there. I mean, you have major universities, you've got state government. We have a higher poverty level than they have. It's unfair to compare us to Wake County. Compare us to another urban area around the United States, and we've become a lot more like them in demographics. But the thing you're going to find also is that the funding for the court system, we are so far behind the curve compared to places like Portland, Oregon, Indianapolis, Austin, Texas. I visited those different places at times when I was working at the DA's office, and now in the consulting that I do for the federal government on this exact topic, and we are way underfunded. The court system, when I started practicing law 40 years ago, was 4% of the state budget. Now it's 2% of the state budget. And look how the state of North Carolina has grown in all those years.
You have said, and this is a quote,
yeah,
it is absolutely ludicrous that we fund the court system so poorly. This is the third branch of government. The legislature is starving it to death.
And I stand by that quote.
It's been this way for 25, 30 years?
Longer. Peter Gilchrist, Spencer's predecessor, who you well know, has been fighting this battle for years. But it wasn't just Peter. Tom Keith, the district attorney in Winston-Salem for a long time, actually had bumper stickers made up that said, how can the DA fight crime when he spends all his time fighting the AOC for funding? He gave them to all the DAs across the state. The legislature's at war with the court system because the legislature is unhappy with some decisions by the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals. And they've decided to starve us to death.
But this has gone back to Democratic control of the legislature and Republican control of the legislature. Is this a bipartisan prejudice?
I think to some degree. I also think they really don't understand how the court system functions. They're a little bit naive. They have raised the court costs time after time after time, expecting these poor people, right, who are the substance of the court system, to actually pay for it. That's ludicrous.
So Spencer, the Observer story also reports something else. I'm sure to you it is troubling and frustrating that so many cases have to be dismissed for one reason or another. But the other thing is that the story points out is that suspects who get away with crimes because their cases were dismissed often move on to worse offenses, including murder. I'm sure that you were aware of that statistic prior to the publication of the story, were you?
Mike, one of my first jobs in the district attorney's office was as a domestic violence misdemeanor prosecutor. And that meant that on what people consider to be simple assaults, they commit them, and for whatever reason, either because someone, the victim won't agree to testify in court,
right,
and there's no other evidence around, I had to dismiss that case, knowing full well that person actually may have may be facing something homicidal and within the months to come. And yet the law requires that I dismiss it anyway.
How many of these dismissals are based on law versus the fact that you don't think you can win?
All of them are based on law and evidence. A dismissal shouldn't be based on anything more than that. It's been said in this series that these dismissals are happening because of resources, and that's not true. Plainly, not true.
They're not being dismissed because of resources?
No. The only way that I think you can tie a correlation between resources and dismissals is in the following way, that it sometimes takes so long for cases to actually get into court. And in that intervening time, we can lose witnesses.
I have to take a break. I'm going to come back and talk about that because that's a surprise to me. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the law enforcement and about the DA's system in North Carolina, and particularly in Charlotte-Mecklenburg, where a lot of cases are dismissed more so than any other county. Weapons charges are dismissed more so than any other county in the state for various reasons, as reported on by Ames, Alexander, and Gavinoff in a four-part series called Dismissed, which appeared recently in the Charlotte Observer. Spencer Merriweather, the DA, is with us as well, along with Stephen Ward, a retired assistant district attorney and now part of the faculty at Belmont Abbey College, where he teaches in their criminal justice department. You just said something that seems to contradict something you said earlier today, or certainly as reported in this story, Spencer, that the cases that are being dismissed are not being dismissed because of resources. And yet we just had this long discussion about underfunded court systems around the state. How can it be true? Define resources.
You will never see a prosecutor actually sitting there writing something on a dismissal form that says, I'm dismissing this case because I don't have the money or because our court system is underfunded. That's not happening.
Okay.
Now, here's what we can do, how we can be better, and why I think that Steve is exactly right, that if we were better resourced, it could likely result in some better outcomes. If, for instance, we can shorten the interval of time between the time of offense and the time of trial, that would be something that would be extremely important that would make our system function a lot better and be more effective. If we were able to do the types of nurturing with our witnesses and victims in between the time of offense and the time of trial, yes, that would be something that I believe would have outcomes which would make us be able to hold more criminals accountable. But to say that, you know, we're dismissing cases because, oh, you know, quite frankly, we just don't have the time or resources, that is not happening.
So if it's not the fact that – if it's not just the fact that some of these charges are being dropped because of a lack of evidence or inability to prosecute for various different reasons, not everyone who's charged with a crime is necessarily guilty or found guilty, and yet maybe they go on later to commit a crime of which they are guilty. How many of the cases that you looked at, Ames and Gavin, fall into that category?
Can you clarify?
Well, just the fact that not everybody who's charged with a crime is found guilty, but from the weapons charges, people who have been brought before the prosecutor with weapons charges, had they been taken to trial, would they have been convicted?
That's anybody's guess. I have heard from former prosecutors, including Steve, who talk about the judgment calls that go into deciding whether to take something to trial. Steve has likened it to being an emergency room doctor where you're constantly doing triage.
Okay.
And when you've got a flood of people coming into the emergency room, you have to make some calls on which cases are most serious, which cases are most winnable, and others have to be dealt with in other ways. And usually that's plea bargaining or dismissing. Am I getting that right, Steve?
Yes.
So, because one of the things...
There is a distinction between plea bargaining and dismissal.
And that distinction is?
Well, for one thing, a dismissal is basically saying we cannot prove any of this happened.
Okay.
We cannot prove a single element that this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times when this process of triage that Ames just talked about, that you do have to make some determinations and decide, based on my assessment of the law and the evidence available in this case, what is the best outcome I can come up with? And that is a plea bargain. That is different from a dismissal and saying that none of this is something we can prove.
Because one thing that this series of stories makes clear is that if more people charged with weapons violations were in fact taken to trial and convicted, there would be a lower homicide rate. Of the nearly 300 people charged with murder here since 2015, more than half were charged previously, and for 28 of them, had they been convicted rather than having their case dismissed, they would have been in jail at the time the murder that they were ultimately convicted of was committed. Do you agree with all of that?
I think that's wildly unfair.
Okay.
And the reason I think it's unfair is because it suggests that if we actually had the evidence in a case, that we wouldn't proceed forward. And of course we would. And if we proceeded in a case where we did not have the evidence, I promise you there would be an article and a series of articles about wrongful convictions from the district attorney's office. That's what you would have.
Okay.
What happens when you decide to base an entire assessment of a justice system on numbers and data? And God bless data. But if you decide to all of a sudden make sure that you're rigging the system based on numbers, what you end up with is things like you had in the Central Park Five. What you end up with is things like you have wrongful convictions that have occurred elsewhere in the state but have not occurred in a place like this one where we're making assessments based on law and evidence. That's what I ask of my prosecutors. That's what I believe the community expects from us. And that's what we'll continue to do. Yes, we have to have some very difficult conversations. And I promise you, I'm one of the only people who still has to have those difficult conversations with victims. Victims, I know that something bad happened. But the question is whether or not we can prove it. And my job is not to lie to those people. My job is not to lie to those victims or lie to the community, but to tell them the truth, even when it's hard. That's what we'll continue to do in this office.
So, Ames and Gavin, is that a fair criticism? Data is not everything? Context has to be applied? Law has to be applied?
Yeah, I'm sure it is. But nonetheless, Mecklenburg was the outlier. And I'm sure Guilford County goes through similar things where they have to have the evidence and they have to be able to have the witnesses to who cooperate and who come forward and the victims who want to move the case forward. But nonetheless, I mean, when you compare 70% to 42% with, I think it was Guilford County, or 23% across the county line to Cabarrus County, it just raised a bunch of questions for us.
Because you say that you discovered, quote, more than half of the roughly 300 people charged with murder in Mecklenburg County since 2015 had prior weapons charges, which means, I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, that someone arrested on a weapons charge has a 50-50 chance of committing a homicide later. Would that be accurate? Am I stretching that out too much?
Gosh, I didn't think of it that way, and I probably would not.
Okay. The reason for all these dismissals, according to their reporting in The Observer, are the heavy caseloads that prosecutors carry in a court system that is so, quote, overburdened that less than 1% of felony cases go to trial. And we've talked about this on this program before. Do potential criminals know that about this system? Do they know we can do anything because we are not going to go to court?
I think a person who actually commits a crime, particularly someone who commits a violent crime, is not doing something based on any sort of rationale. They're not doing it based on reason. They're not doing it based on common sense. As a matter of fact, they're doing it on the absence of reason and the absence of common sense. So to say that someone is actually looking at the numbers that, quite frankly, that Gavin and Ames actually came up with, that on my best day I wouldn't be able to put together, because the administrative office of the courts does not make that easy at all. The fact that you've got someone who is a criminal, a felon, who is putting together that sort of logic to say, yes, I will commit a crime in Mecklenburg County, no, I don't think
that's
the case.
But doesn't word on the street get around that so-and-so, even though they're not coming to you with information about what they know, they know. So if the word gets around on the street that the person A has done this crime and they dropped the charges, and they've dropped the charges 13 times,
in my experience, if we're talking about someone breaking into a house, we're talking about someone who's actually robbing a car, mm-hmm. that could be the case. But if we're talking about someone deciding in a heat of passion to open up a gun and shoot somebody or shoot up somebody's house, no, I do not think that's actually part of the calculus in making that determination.
Because when I asked the original question about is the word on the street, is the reputation that we're weak on crime, essentially, I'm paraphrasing myself now, Stephen, you kind of nodded your head in recognition.
Well, and this is not unique to Charlotte. This is everywhere in the country.
Okay.
I want to support what Spencer said, and that is many crimes are done in the heat of passion, especially violent crimes. This most recent murder here in the Uptown, where the innocent bystander was shot and killed.
Right.
A bunch of 16-year-olds get into a verbal argument, and one pulls a gun out and starts shooting at the others. Now, when you and I were 16, Mike, we didn't pull guns out. We settled it with our fists. We've had an entire cultural change, not just in Charlotte, but around the country, where young people are so prone to use violence to settle an argument. And that's why we're seeing a spike in violence. And there's another factor that's left out of all of this, and that is the victims. I ran the Crimes Against Persons Unit in the district attorney's office for several years. And we had an awful time getting victims to be willing to come to court for trial. We would send police officers out, hand them a subpoena, tell them to be there, and they did not show up. I don't know whether it was out of fear, whether they didn't want to miss work, as been pointed out here, but they didn't show up. And sometimes I think
So when they don't show up, the charges are dropped.
Exactly.
Right.
They're dismissed, exactly as we've been talking about here. I had situations where prosecutors walked into the courtroom with a full calendar, and they're back at 11 o'clock on Monday morning. And I go, what are you doing back here? Not a single witness showed up. And they might have 10 or 12 of these violent crimes, armed robberies and such, ready for trial, but the witnesses did not show up.
So despite that, let's talk about a different set of numbers, the numbers that you have to deal with every day. Mecklenburg County has 86 prosecutors, which is fewer than almost any county of its size in the country, according to this Observer report. We ought to have how many?
The numbers say about 125.
We spend less per resident on our courts than any other state-funded system. Politicians talk about being tough on crime. They run on it all the time, both sides of the aisle. But the court, as you have said, has been chronically underfunded for generations now. Is it simply a lack of understanding of how court systems work, a lack of what life on the street is like in these various different communities around the state by people in the legislature? Surely the Mecklenburg County delegation knows what you face, right?
In my conversations with Ames and Gavin, and they talked about this in the series, what added numbers and added resources allow you to do is to do some different things. And other communities across the country have been doing those different things. And what they do is they make their communities smaller. They build relationships between the different institutions that one has to interface with in the justice system so that there's already trust there and you don't have to build it from scratch each and every time. So the fact that we don't have a community prosecution system in Mecklenburg County or anywhere in the state of North Carolina is because we don't have resources and someone hasn't decided that that's a priority because they think that every single office in North Carolina ought to look exactly the same and be structured the same way.
Right.
And our experience across the country as prosecutors tells us that is nothing could be farther from the truth.
Because Charlotte is different from Goldsboro.
Yes, absolutely.
In every way.
I'm glad you picked on Goldsboro. I always pick on Dare County, so thank you.
do stories like the one that appeared for 4 days running in The Observer hurt or help you?
Here's where I believe that it helps, because quite frankly, in our justice system, we have not, in the last few years, we have not been giving the kind of attention to the plight of victims that I wish that we had. And I applaud Ames and Gavin for doing exactly that. That those frustrations, even though they're things that I believe that we're limited in our ability to do things about, those frustrations are real, and I'm glad that they have voice. They do hurt as someone who works in an office, and quite frankly, someone who worked on the line as a prosecutor, knowing that each and every day we were doing our darndest to try to make sure that we're getting justice for this community and for victims. And now I got to go to law schools and try to get people and tell them about what a wonderful job and what a wonderful difference they can make. And all of a sudden, they have to be confronted with a headline that says dismissed. And did these people have to die? That's hard.
But
that
also,
is frustrating.
But it also explains why. And the series goes on to report that I think we had 87 homicides in 2017, roughly 10 murders for every 100,000 residents, three times that of New York City. And the homicide rate is higher this year. Are bigger cities like New York facing the same court system lack of funding problems that we faced?
No.
So this is unique to North Carolina and to Mecklenburg County?
Our level of investment, when I first sat down with you, Mike, one of the things I talked about, and I'll still talk about it today, is the presence of family justice centers.
Right.
And the fact that by having something where our victims and witnesses are resourced and are supported, when you build structures like that, when you invest in things like that, you end up with better outcomes at trial, and you end up with better outcomes in the system. We do not have things like that here. In the Bronx, they actually have 5 of those family justice centers. In Mecklenburg County, at 1.1 million people, doesn't have one. That is reflective of the type of lack of investment in our justice system that we have in North Carolina that does not exist elsewhere.
Stephen talked about witnesses not coming forward, victims not coming forward for trial, which leaves the prosecutor no alternative but to dismiss the case or to ask for the case to be dismissed. Kerr Putney, the CMPD chief, has said people aren't coming forward who know things, who could help them find the perpetrators and then take them to your office and prosecute them. You have said that there's sometimes the same problem. People will not tell you. They will not cooperate with prosecution. Which is the bigger problem? Lack of evidence, lack of credible witnesses, refusal to testify, the fact that people won't come forward with what they know?
All of it's true.
That's all part of the problem.
All part of the problem.
These are the people in the communities being most affected by this, correct?
One of the first cases I tried was a woman who was raped outside of a sweepstakes parlor.
Right.
In that case, The woman, the survivor, actually had all sorts of issues that she had to contend with, that she was going to be judged by a jury. And that case was very dependent on an independent witness, a laborer, someone who basically cleaned schools, who mopped floors at schools. And when that woman actually showed up to testify, after she testified, I cried. And the reason I cried, and she's like, why? She's like, why do you have this expectation that I wouldn't show up? And I was like, because so many people don't. Because they figure if it doesn't affect their lives, then why should I bother to show up? Well, that woman did. Yeah. And she said what I hope that all of our citizens would say. I showed up because it's the right thing to do. I showed up because I know that it made a difference.
You talked to people in the course of reporting this story, victims and victims' families, about this. What did they tell you about the reluctance to come forward and cooperate with law enforcement?
They know there's fear in the community. They know that there are sometimes repercussions against witnesses who have the courage to come forward and testify.
Do they understand that by not coming forward, they're letting people stay on the streets who may commit other, who do in fact commit other crimes and may affect other people in their community, including themselves? Do they understand that?
I think they do.
But they just feel paralyzed with what, fear of reprisal?
Yes.
And you probably can't blame them. If that's their neighborhood, it's almost self-preservation to an extent.
How unusual is this to happen? Is it just particular to Charlotte-Mecklenburg? And you've said that with community prosecutors, which we'll talk about, you build trust, but trust doesn't necessarily trump fear, does it, or the ability to protect that person?
Well, you know, and it's not just prosecutors. It's when you build community structures, when you build relationships between communities and people who aren't going to leave that community, who live right then and there in that community, and says, you know what, you can't actually tell the truth about what happened to your child because we're going to be here to make sure it's okay. Like, that matters when you have that sort of credibility, not just from a DA's office and not just from the cops, but within your community structures that people can depend on.
Because you told The Observer that Mecklenburg has more big city problems than other North Carolina cities, and so we have more people who are distrustful of police, more who are distrustful of prosecutors, simply right. Because we haven't got enough prosecutors to build bridges. Is that what we're talking about?
That's certainly part of it.
Spencer Merriweather is with us. He's the Mecklenburg County DA. Stephen Ward's a retired district attorney. And we're also here with the two reporters at the Charlotte Observer Dismissed series, Ames Alexander and Gavin Off. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Dismissed, the four-part series that recently appeared in the Charlotte Observer, and the kind of reporting that you get from newspapers, which is why they should stick around. Ames Alexander is with us. He is one of the investigative reporters involved in that series, and Gavin Off is with us. He's the data reporter for that series. They did a lot of combing. We should talk about how you did this in a second. Spencer Merriweather also joins us. He's the Mecklenburg County District Attorney, and Stephen Ward is a retired assistant DA and a member of the Criminal Justice Department faculty at Belmont Abbey College, who also consults with federal government. You talked, Spencer, a minute ago, and you talked in this series about how more funding from the state for the court system in your office would help provide witness protection, and it would aid in the hiring of what you called, and you referred to today, as community prosecutors. I'm completely unfamiliar with what that is. So what is a community prosecutor?
Community prosecutor, and they're also people that refer to it as a community justice program because people don't want to feel like their community is being prosecuted.
Okay.
So you have a assistant district attorney that goes in and builds relationships with a small business community, that builds a relationship with neighborhood captains and the like. Any problem, there's no problem that goes on in that community that DA is not aware of. That person is able to put the crimes that are committed there in a proper context. They are able to reach out and communicate with those witnesses at a moment's notice to know exactly how to prioritize the crimes that occur in that community, to realize what something, for instance, that is a stupid mistake committed by a 15-year-old kid, and what is something that is a forewarning of violence in a particular community. What is something that makes it so that it's difficult for kids to actually feel safe when they're on their walk to school? That's the something that if a prosecutor is there along with a police officer, along with a community advocate, that pairing is something that can make a critical and has made a critical difference in other places across the country.
Is witness protection not available due to lack of funding?
Well, when I say witness protection, I think there's a people who, you know, imagine that there are going to be people in a neighborhood who are changing their name and all of a sudden living in a remote location, and that's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
What witness protection can be is, for instance, having someone who their sole job is listening to jail calls while the perpetrator or perpetrators are in custody to make sure they're not trying to use the long arm of criminality to seek retribution against the people who may or may not testify. That's something that I would like to see happen more of in Mecklenburg County.
You know, it's one thing to drop the charges for somebody who's accused of shoplifting, I suppose, or drop the charges because of a break-in in the car in a parking lot someplace. It's another to drop charges that involve a weapon. How often does that happen? How often historically, Stephen, has that happened in the 25 years you were with the department, where a person who has used a gun in the commission of a crime has had those charges dropped?
It happened all too often, but again, as Spencer said earlier, it wasn't done simply because of lack of resources. It was done because the witness did not show up in court. We had an awful time back when I ran the Crime Against Persons Unit back in 2004 to 2007, especially with the immigrant community. They didn't trust the police. Anytime we came around to try and talk to them, they thought there were ulterior motives. They were going to be deported or something of that nature. And so they just did not show up for court when we needed them there.
So this is what Gary McFadden and Kerr Putney talk about when they talk about cooperation with ICE, that in the immigrant community, that's lowering the trust level of law enforcement with that community and making us less safe. Is that essentially what you see happening as well?
I think
kind of a sidebar story, but nonetheless, do you agree with that?
I think that all of us who are in the criminal justice system have to make sure that every victim and every witness feels empowered to participate in the justice system. So yes.
So the Observer reports that in 2018-19, less than 1% of criminal cases in Mecklenburg County went to trial. Most of them were plea bargained or dismissed. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, is that saving us money? Are these cases being plea bargained and dismissed because they aren't that serious?
Here's some other numbers that didn't find their way into the article. That I think there were some folks that compared us with Guilford County and other counties, and they said that we sent fewer people to prison last year. What they didn't say is that we sent more people to prison on armed robbery and robberies last year than did anyone else in the state. 162 on robberies, that we sent to prison more habitual felons, repeat offenders, than anyone else in the state, 132. Mm-hmm. Those things are happening. Yes, if I had more trial time, and you've heard me on this show and other places actually talk about the fact that I want more courtrooms, more trial space, more trial time. If I had more of it, we'd be convicting more people.
We have two courtrooms, is that right?
Yeah, we've got probably about 3 courtrooms on our trial Superior Court.
And how many did we have in the 1950s?
Steve, you weren't alive then, right?
I was alive then.
1960s. I'll move it up a couple.
1980.
Okay.
We had two.
Two.
The population of this county has quadrupled in that period of time, but yet we've only gone up by one trial courtroom.
Wow. From your longtime experience, and now that you're teaching this and consulting with this, Stephen, when you are forced to drop weapons charges, does that make us less safe? Does it make those people who had those weapons charges pending more prone to use a weapon again in the commission of a crime?
Yes, and we're not unique. That's everywhere in the United States. You threw the number out a moment ago about only 1% of cases go to trial here in Mecklenburg County. That's really not much different than any other large urban area in the United States. They all have the resource issue of getting, but we are in especially dangerous territory of not having enough resources.
You write, Ames and Gavin, in one report about Anthony Walker, who had been charged 9 times over the years, only to have those charges dropped. You quote the murder victim's aunt as saying, "I can see 1 time, 2 times, but 9 times? Come on, our family's life is changed forever." And that's a quote. Do you know the average number of times alleged perpetrators are put through the system only to have their charges dropped?
Oh, I do. We did not run that analysis, no.
You also write about Shaquan Curitan, who was charged 47 times with weapons crimes, including 16 armed robberies. Dewan Montfort, charged with 30 weapons crimes, including 9 assaults with a deadly weapon with intent to kill. Joshua Gill, charged with 19 weapons crimes in a 2-week period, all involving armed robbery. All these cases were dismissed?
And not Shaquan. Shaquan did serve a couple years, and I'm going off memory here, but I think he had 30-some that were dropped. He may still be in county jail right now. I know he was when we ran the series, and we tried to reach out to him.
Do you think the public knows this? Do you think the public understands this, Spencer?
I think they certainly are shocked by it. I think they recognize that, again, these cases are – the impact upon a community is great when you have someone who's committed a crime and they are unable to be held accountable as they should be. Mm-hmm. But, again, the question is whether or not we have the facts and evidence to proceed and secure a conviction.
In smaller
– if we don't, the one thing that actually, I promise you, is more ratifying to a criminal defendant is a not guilty – or hearing from a judge that a case is dismissed because we don't even have the evidence to make it to a jury.
So in smaller jurisdictions in North Carolina with less overburdened court systems, these same people doing these same crimes would be in jail?
It depends. It depends on what the evidence is. I happen to think that the other 44 prosecutors in the...
How can he be charged 19 times with a gun violation and not be in jail?
You can't throw that number at me without talking about facts.
Okay.
Without actually looking at the underlying facts in each and every one of those cases. When Gavin says that, like, data matters and he looks at some of the other counties in the state and says, well, you know, we have this data, that data doesn't mean anything unless you're actually looking at each and every one of those criminal files and determining whether or not you have a sustainable case. Because if you don't, your sworn responsibility to the Constitution and to the people you represent is to do the right thing in that case and do what the law and the evidence dictates.
So I'm accused of committing a crime, and in the course of committing that crime, I've used a weapon. And that case is dismissed. And I come back next week, and the same thing happens again, and that case is dismissed. And I come back the third time, and that case is dismissed. And this goes on in some cases, as you pointed out in this story, 47 times, I think. What's missing in that?
Well, here's my commitment. I'll tell you, the first time that you have someone who actually has a case dismissed, they are certainly not going to be on law enforcement's radar.
They are.
Yes. And the first thing I will tell you is that when we have someone who is a repeat offender in that way, whether or not they've been held accountable, is... it's the expectation of the prosecutors in my office that we're saddling up with law enforcement and figuring out what kind of evidence would it take to actually hold this person accountable.
Well, what has been missing? And that's, I guess that was going to be my question. What, help us understand what cripples you in your ability to bring these people to justice.
Sometimes it's the amount of special attention that you can give to the victims and witnesses you need to sustain that case. Sometimes, no matter how much special attention you give to that case, you just can't get there. In some of the cases that were mentioned, even though this wasn't necessarily articulated in the articles that were produced, you know, there's a difference between whether or not a defendant wears a mask or not, mm-hmm. which means whether or not he can be identified at court or not. Mm-hmm. And so the expectation that we would be able to prosecute a case where a person cannot be identified is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Spencer mentioned that a lot of the information that you've dug up is not easily available to him and his prosecutors in the court systems. How did you do what you did? Where did you get this information, Gavin?
The data came from the North Carolina Administrative Office of the Courts, and David Rayner, who's a data reporter at the NNO, our sister paper, and I spent probably 6 months or so off and on fine-tuning our analysis, and we would bounce our numbers off not only the Mecklenburg DA here, but also the AOC. And we first cut out around 195,000 gun crimes, but we also wanted to keep in mind that, okay, if an armed robbery charge was dismissed, did that person, was he or she found guilty or convicted of another crime, you know, selling cocaine? And if that was the case, we did not include that in the dismissal because he or she's doing time for the other charge. But it was a lot of work, a lot of hard crunching data analysis. I think we were really thorough with bouncing our numbers off folks at the state level. And then lastly, we looked at paper records. We went down to the courthouse and printed out the charges and fact-checked ourselves.
And that part was pretty labor-intensive. One of the things that we did is we looked at the prior criminal records of the roughly 300 people who've been charged with murder in Mecklenburg County since 2015. So we essentially looked at their full criminal records, went to the courthouse, pulled a lot of the paper files to identify the facts of the cases. So it's just a lot of old-fashioned grunt work.
In part four of your series, the final part, you write about Mecklenburg County dismissing armed robbery charges against a man named Gerald Exum, who then goes before prosecutors in Cabarrus County and gets 4 years and 10 months in prison for armed robbery. And you quote Cabarrus District Attorney Roxanne Vanikoven as saying, quote, "We're tough on crime, and the criminals know it. When they get caught with a gun in Cabarrus County, they aren't happy about it." Does that drive crime south? In other words, if you're going to commit a crime in Cabarrus County, you're going to go to jail.
You know what would make me tough on crime?
What?
If I had a crime in the Exum case, for instance, that was on surveillance, that was on clear surveillance, where actually it was really easily identifiable to prosecute that person, as opposed to the Mecklenburg case, where the person was actually wearing a mask and could not be identified.
But
that was a clear difference in a case that actually was not articulated in the Observer series. And yeah, it'd be really easy to be, quote unquote, tough on crime when you actually have the evidence to sustain you being tough on crime. That did not happen in the Exum case.
So they were in your Exum case, but it did in their Exum case.
In their Exum case, they had surveillance. We did not.
Okay. And further south, in South Carolina, the series reports that those convicted of armed robbery in South Carolina have to serve at least 7 years in prison before they become eligible for parole in North Carolina. The minimum sentence for armed robbery is 3 years and 2 months, which raises the question, are our gun laws our gun laws strict enough?
I think if you stick a gun in somebody's face, that certainly should be an enhanced sentence. No question in my mind.
Is it?
It isn't. Under the law, it is an enhanced sentence. It's considered to be an extremely violent crime.
But if they're tougher in South Carolina, are we as tough when we have the evidence?
The other thing I would tell you about time in North Carolina versus a lot of other places is that we do have truth in sentencing, which doesn't exist a lot of other places. You might go to New York and Pennsylvania or wherever else and hear about a 20-year sentence, only to realize that in true time, the person's serving about seven.
Okay.
If you hear 7 years in North Carolina, it's 7 years in North Carolina.
Is that the case in South Carolina where they don't have truth in sentencing?
In South Carolina, that's 7 years without parole. So
that's the truth.
Yes.
And what you get is what you're going to serve.
And at one time here in North Carolina, we had the same 7 year rule.
Uh-huh.
But when the legislature restructured our sentencing grid, they basically cut the sentences in half for all these serious crimes.
Why did they do that?
Prison overcrowding.
Okay. Just a couple of months ago, Republicans who control the legislature brought up the fact that we found a $900 million budget surplus, and they wanted to kind of give it back to taxpayers. How far, and we then launched into a conversation about how you could spend that $900 million on things that the state seems to need. How far would $900 million go to help you in your efforts?
Very long way, and it's a good investment to invest in the court system, because I promise you, as we've actually already seen, if you do not invest in a court system, you will end up paying more in the long run.
Is that falling on deaf ears? Are you making headway with Raleigh?
I will say that I have had conversations with members of our legislative delegation that have been productive, but quite frankly, this isn't about a one-time appropriation. It's about a fundamental structural change in the way that the administrative office of the court and the way that the legislature sees how justice should be funded in a place like Mecklenburg County.
Spencer Merriweather is the Mecklenburg County DA. He was with us along with Stephen Ward, a retired assistant DA, and the two reporters in the dismissed Charlotte Observer series, Ames Alexander and Gavin Off. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.